Man, what a weekend it was. Welcome inside another edition of the show. Power Talk of Muncie to new WMUN on to another week. Yes, we have a lot to get to on the program, as we always do. Hope you all had phenomenal weekends. For those that are curious, I asked the question at the end of the show on, Friday? For those that want to know, we didn't find anything to get done. We didn't find anything to do. We hung at home, watched sports all weekend. So I got to watch Ball State men's basketball Saturday night. We'll have a recap about that. Last night, of course, Ball State women's basketball. How about, man, that performance was really incredible by Ball State women's basketball. They continue to really impress, and that's where we'll start the show today, coming up here in a little bit. Clearly some reaction to Ball State men's basketball as well, because that was a tough ending on Saturday. A game that looked like one that they were going to close out in the final moments. Ridiculous shot put Miami of Ohio in overtime, and it just felt like the wind came out of the sails for Ball State at the very end of it, and that was kind of all that was there to be had. So we'll dive into that. Of course, football over the weekend. I want to mention this real quick, and we might get into this a little bit later in the program. We'll also talk Pacers, because Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton played for the first time together this past Friday. I tried to stay very quiet on this, and we do this time and time again, and this is more of a national topic than it is a local topic, if you really want to know the truth, and that is this, okay? That is, we love to write people off or teams off in the middle of things happening. Every time there's a dynasty, every time there is a front runner, this happened with the New England Patriots, this happened with the Golden State Warriors, this has happened in every sport that you could possibly think of. The team that is in the midst of a dynasty, or in the midst of creating their own dynasty, or in the case of a ridiculous stretch, I'm talking about Patrick Mahomes here, how many analysts, countless numbers of them, analyst after analyst after analyst, tried to write him off this year. And I have said from the very start about this, that until it happens, that they will be the team to be in the AFC. They are the defending Super Bowl champions. And even though Kansas City will go into Baltimore this coming Sunday as an underdog and on the road, and all I would feel like Baltimore goes in with that mindset, say, we got to knock off the champs, we got to knock off the incumbent. And yet, that talk went into the divisional round for yesterday, and oh man, did a lot of people look kind of silly. This is not saying you can't criticize a team for, very subpar performance. And I get it. You know, the Chiefs' offense wasn't great this year. Travis Kelce didn't have a great year. Patrick Mahomes statistically had one of his worst years of his career. But, hey, you get in the playoffs, and by any means necessary, put yourself in a position to maybe make something happen. And I don't know about you, but it seemed like a lot of people were quiet last night when the Chiefs got it done. That's all I'll say about that. And I kind of got a little satisfaction out of it. I'm not going to lie, because we always want the new story. We always want to talk about, there's a new dynasty in town, or there's a new up-and-coming story. I get it. You know, at the end of the day, you want multiple stories. You want multiple teams in it. It may be a back and forth. Dynasties are not great for sports talk radio or narratives, I guess, or that's what it seems like. But you almost were disrespecting greatness in a little bit of time. No matter how you feel, about the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that the it's gotten a little bit much with Taylor Swift and all those different things, but at the end of the day, my mindset has always been this, and others should kind of think this way. Until further notice, they are the team to beat, and I don't know about you, but they're going to be disrespected again. They're going to be counted out again coming up on Sunday, and don't fall for it, folks. Just don't fall for it. Wait until it happens and then react, you know? But Patrick Mahomes, since he started as an NFL quarterback in this league in 2018, has never not played, at least in the AFC Championship game. All 6 years he started, he has played in the AFC Championship game. It is a ridiculous run. Ridiculous. Absolutely insane. So anyway, that's not what I wanted to take over the show, because we'll talk more about football a little bit later on. My computer is still on weekend time. I don't know why. The time on my clock on my computer says Friday at 9:58 p.m. I don't know what's going on with this thing, but I do have enough to go off of what happened with Ball State basketballs. So, yep, both over the weekend. This should be the story from over the weekend, Ball State women's basketball. And I said it last week when the plans were announced on Tuesday last week, that this was going to be a nationally televised game, the top two teams in the MAC, and all the hype and all the different things that are around it. And I was just so impressed with the way Ball State was able to handle things on Wednesday. You know, you got to think, at the end of the day, you're dealing with 18 to 22 to 23 year olds in a lot of ways. They are college students, and yes, as a team, you know, you bond over the fact that this is collegiate athletics and those sorts of things. But sometimes we take for granted that at the end of the day, they're young adults. And I know that's weird for somebody like me to say. I'm 32 years old. I'm not like, you know, I'm not like 45, 50 years old. But at the end of the day, I think sometimes we forget about that. I know sometimes I forget about that when covering high school sports, when talking about they are kids in a lot of ways. And so why I brought it up last week about just how impressed I was about how Ball State women's basketball handled the moment on Wednesday, knowing all of the momentum and all of the different things around what was to come Sunday, yesterday, and to play under control, play with confidence, and play with not only confidence in your own ability, but confidence in the fact that you are the better basketball team. When watching that game last night, it really felt like Ball State just had an ownership about the moment. I know that that is such a cliche type of phrase. But, you know, I've watched enough of this team this year. And, you know, I wouldn't say I know the ins and outs of every little thing that they're doing or every single player and the strengths and weaknesses and what they're trying to do. I mean, honestly, us covering the team, a lot of times we don't know everything that's going on. But you can certainly take things by the way you watch them and by the way that they're perceived. And in this case, I just feel like they take the floor every single night thinking that they're the best basketball team on the floor. And that confidence is so darn impressive. And it doesn't feel like any moment is above any other. That it's a task-minded approach that every single game that they have is the most important game. And you hear those cliches all the time, but when watching what happened on Wednesday, when Ball State had a 20-plus point win, and this game yesterday, I didn't notice any other difference as far as the focus and as far as the intensity. And that, I think, in any sort of way, has to make you so optimistic about this basketball team. No moment is too big, and they stay in the moment. It is said so much, but this team feels that way. And Brady Selly and his crew, a big-time win against Toledo, 65-51. And you know, the conversations that you have after something like this is, A, you are now the team that everybody is kind of chasing in the Mid-American Conference. That's wonderful. That's what you expected to be. You're 6-0 in conference. You're 16-2 overall. You now have the little bit of a tiebreaker over Toledo. You play this crew again coming up on February 24th. So by no means did you win the Mid-American Conference last night, but you took a giant step forward. And everybody says, okay, that's the first of a couple of times. And yes, you're going to see Toledo again. But the more you win, and the more you put on impressive shows like you did last week, it starts to put in perspective, hey, if you keep winning, are you going to get that national respect a little bit? You know, the mid-major rankings come out all the time, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, is the top 25 RPI stuff a realistic shot right now? I'll tell you this, it happens a lot. When we talk about the NCAA tournament in men's basketball, we see it all the time. You know, I think of like a St. Mary's team. If you remember, late in the season a couple of years back, they snuck into the top 25 and ended up beating Gonzaga late. I can't remember what year that was. But, hey, you keep winning, and there is a realistic opportunity for you to possibly be ranked in the top 25. And not only that, and I get this, this is my conversation and the things that came to mind for me last night. That moment in itself, to have four players in double figures, you shot 49%, you were really good all across the board, you forced 23 turnovers from the opponent. We can get into all of those things, but from a bigger picture standpoint, what last night signified is that Ball State's 16-2, they're 6-0 in conference, and I'm looking at the schedule going forward. You keep winning, you can put some pressure on the fact that this team could make a case for a top 25 appearance, and if that happens, you know, the course of how you make the NCAA tournament could change. It could. Because I can't remember the last time that a top 25 team did not make the NCAA tournament in either of the respective leagues, men's or women's basketball. So, again, you got to win a game like that to put yourself in that perspective. But that's one of the dates you circled. I think if you have a solid couple, 3 weeks, you know, it's not going to take you beating Toledo again to put you in that conversation. So, you know, larger picture in mind, last night was incredibly key. I think it confirmed a lot of the things we already know about this team. If you haven't been paying attention and are new to the party on this, you're going to learn a lot about this team has great individual talent. This team can go 4 or 5 deep of players that can lead them in scoring. I mean, 4 of their 5 starters scored in double figures. Nyla Hampton and Allie Becky both scoring their 1,000th point in college basketball. So that's one thing. But just the versatility that this team has. Like, Nyla Hampton, the headlines will say she scored her 1,000th point, but she is more valuable as a defender. I mean, she just is. I mean, she's a really nice complimentary scorer, but as a defender, what she brings to the table is really, really impressive. Allie Becky coming off a ridiculous week. She dropped a career-high 30-plus on Wednesday of last week and had a very efficient 5-for-10. Like, it's kind of crazy, right? She was 10-for-11 from the floor on Wednesday, and she still shot 50% last night, but it was like a step down from what she did on Wednesday. I mean, that just shows you the impressive nature of what she's doing. But what I love about this basketball team is this community is starting to get behind this. And, you know, it took a moment last night, and it can, to maybe start to bring more on the train here. But, folks, this team's legit. And, you know, the special nature of what they have ahead of them, you know, I think top 25 is realistic. I would, you know, at this point, they're the front runner. And look, being in front, I think that they've kind of played from the front runner scenario a lot this year, but now they really are in the Mid-American Conference. It's going to be a little different now going forward, but I don't feel like any moment is too big for this basketball team. Really don't feel that way. And last night proved it. No question about it. Great crowd on hand. And Ball State women's basketball continuing to roll on. What a night it was. And it'll be interesting to see how they capitalize off of it this week. So Ball State, 65-51 winners. Miami of Ohio at home. Coming up on Wednesday of this week. Then they are at Eastern Michigan this weekend to take a look at the standings. Eastern Michigan 2-4 in conference. Miami of Ohio 2-4 in conference. So, again, I think this is a pivotal week for this basketball team coming off the high that was last week. You're playing teams in the middle of the conference, and it doesn't matter where you're ranked. Bottom, middle, or top, I say it, and I'll say it again. You are judged on what you do in the middle of the conference. What you do against those opponents, that it's not an exception that you are the top team in the conference. You are still judged by what you do against the teams right now. Buffalo, Northern Illinois, Western Michigan, Ohio, Eastern Michigan, Miami, Akron, Central Michigan. They're all 3-3 or worse in the Mid-American Conference. Your win against Toledo is going to take the headlines, but if you don't take care of the games that really you should take care of, that's going to change things. But I think this week, again, based on the way they handled last week, will be a lot of fun to watch. So hope you all enjoy that. If you were able to get out to that game last night, it was on CBS Sports Network, and the crowd was awesome. And again, just an outstanding win for Ball State women's basketball. I think there's a realistic shot that they're ranked in the top 25 at some point. I really feel that way. So, anyway, all right, we will step aside. When we come back, we're going to take a break, kind of break this up, because wanted to talk about Ball State women's basketball first. Really tough one for Ball State men's basketball. They fall to Miami of Ohio 87-80 on Saturday, and there are a lot of things to recap on that. We'll get to that when we return. Hope you all had a great weekend. We're just getting started on a Monday edition of the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. We're always brought to you by Walls Furniture Mattress, back in partnering with us for 2024 on the program. We appreciate their support. Hey, look, at the end of the day, It's 90% of what they have in the showroom for in stock for you, 48 hours or less. If I asked you, you know, all the times we talked about Walls Furniture Mattress, what's the one thing that stands out? I've had people tell me that. 90% of what's on the showroom for in stock for you, 48 hours or less. You're going to get what you select quickly in their vast showroom. Go see Craig Robbins and his staff. Nebo Road in Muncie, you can visit and browse anytime. WallsFurniture.com. Reaction Monday for a reason. 765-287-1340 at Mark WMUN on Twitter as well. So we talked about the story of the weekend locally really was Ball State women's basketball in the big matchup last night. They got it done against Toledo 65-51, and now in the driver's seat at the top of the Mid-American Conference. Long way to go. You've still got, you know, 5-6 weeks of Mid-American Conference basketball until you're talking about the Mid-American Conference tournament. But man, it couldn't be off to a better start than what you're at right now, and a great crowd at Worthen Arena last night. Now, over to Ball State men's basketball. Crazy game against Miami of Ohio. Ball State falls in overtime 87-80. And this is where, again, if you looked at the score and you looked at the end result, you'd say, wow, what a hard-fought game. You know, Ball State trailed by 2 at half. They were plus 2 in the second half. And then Miami of Ohio plus 7 in overtime. Ball State had a lead by 10 with 5:28 to play. 5:28 to play, Ball State led by 10. With 4:56 left, they led by 11. Miami of Ohio just very slowly but surely chipped away. And it took a ridiculous three by Darwishi Hunter from Miami of Ohio. Hit a step back three from the right wing, somehow, some way, on track, knocked it down, and went to overtime. And then it just felt like that jumper in itself, and really the momentum, had been seized by Miami of Ohio. Probably with under 3 to play, they started to get some things in gear, and they made their run, but it was capped off by that 3, and you could see, starting the overtime period, the energy just had completely flipped over to Miami of Ohio's side. They jumped out to a very quick overtime lead, 6-point lead with 3:29 left in overtime. They grew that lead to a 9, 83-74 with 2:01 to play. Again, it was just a momentum swing that just absolutely shocked a Ball State team that really felt like with about 3 minutes to play, they had won the basketball game. So there's a lot of learning lessons there, but this is where the learning lesson really came into play. That three made by Darwishi Hunter, as time expired, with he launched it with about a second to play, you could see Michael Lewis on the sidelines, Ball State men's basketball coach, screaming for the team to foul. And, you know, they had the ball, and Miami of Ohio was holding for the final look. You could see from the sidelines the staff is urging the players on the floor to foul. Because a three-point shot ties it. You foul, you send them to the line, a couple of free throws, you guarantee you stay in the lead and you can play the foul game. Ball State did not foul. I would say you probably defended it as best as you could. You need to watch the replay of that. It was great on-ball defense. I can't remember if it was Bailey Middleton Jr. or Anderson on the defense, but, I mean, as tight as defending as you can, Hunter made a great shot, but you could feel like the game kind of changed from that shot right there. Not just, hey, we're going to overtime, but the energy and the momentum was clearly on the side of Miami of Ohio. And again, Ball State falls to 1-5 in conference, 9-9 overall. And you kind of just after the game were just thinking, how do you let an 11-point lead slip with under 5 minutes to play at home? Everything was working for you offensively. I think there was a stretch there where pretty much every, from 5:53, you hit a couple of shots there at the 53 mark, at the 28 mark. You had like three straight possessions there with about 5 minutes to play where you scored. And, you know, for a young team to close it out, this is different because we have talked about this team and late-game situations, you know, not having just that one extra play to get them over the hump. In this case, they were the ones holding on to the lead, trying to close it out, trying to force Miami of Ohio to foul them, and it was almost reverse roles, and yet Miami of Ohio kind of took it away from them at the end of the regulation, and then used that momentum, obviously, to build a big lead in overtime, and the rest is history right there. And so you could see on the faces of the players the shell-shocked nature of how this all came about. And you got to give immense credit to Miami of Ohio, but that's the difference. Miami of Ohio came into that game at 2-3 in conference, Ball State 1-4. Ball State and Miami of Ohio would have both been 2-4 after that game. Now Miami of Ohio is 3-3 in conference, Ball State's 1-5. So Ball State, one of two teams at 1-5, along with Eastern Michigan. And, you know, what was such a promising week after the win against Eastern Michigan, and you just flat out outplayed them. You know, the second half started very similarly to how the Eastern Michigan game was. You were stronger in the second half than you had played in the first half. You'd gotten some things figured out. Bashir Jihad was unbelievable there in the first 10 minutes. He had 10 points at halftime, scored like 13 points in the second half in like a 7-minute stretch. He was unguardable by Miami of Ohio. You got some things worked out inside. Your guards were playing with confidence. You had gotten Trent Middleton Jr. off the bench to give you some really good moments. You extended that bench a little bit, and it really felt like everything was cooking. And then, you know, you get up 11 with three-ish to play, and it all changed. I mean, it all changed. I mean, numbers-wise, you're going to love the way it looks, but you didn't get the win. And so, it was a gut check moment for the basketball team, and you could see the disappointment afterwards. You could read the quotes, hear the upset nature of all of it, and you know you felt like you took a step, and that was just a crushing loss. My question is this: how do you come out this week? How does this week look after that game. You know, that was at home as well. I mean, that's the other part. You know, when you build an 11-point lead with under four to play and you have an ability to close it out and, you know, fans had come seeing after the Eastern Michigan game and, you know, that happens kind of on the home floor. It hurts. It absolutely does. There's a lot of basketball to be played, but that was just a tough end to what felt like, I mean, really in the second half, and I was throwing this out there on Twitter as well, they were the better basketball team. They looked like they had figured out Miami of Ohio defensively. They had a matchup that nobody could stop. Bashir Jihad was fantastic. He had 29 points. He was 11 for 11 from the free throw line. I mean, there's so many different things that you look at this game and you say you had the advantage, and it took just a little bit of ounce of momentum from Miami of Ohio, and they changed it all very, very quickly on you. So, look, bigger picture on this, you always go back to, and I go back to football. You know, we talked about the near wins and the moments that slipped through your fingers in football and how that could have resulted in you maybe being a bowl-eligible team. I think the same applies here. It's just too early to tell. It is. But you're going to look back at this game, circle this game, and you've already had a couple of those near wins. I think you have probably at least two, if not three, already on there that came down to the final moments. This one feels different because you had an 11-point lead, and you had the basketball, and you had the control, and you were at home. That's where this one differs. And that's where, you know, I thought overtime was also very telling. You know, Miami came out and just attacked and were aggressive and hit a couple of shots. And, I mean, it felt like overtime just started and you were down six already. It's almost like you spotted, like Miami of Ohio came into the overtime period, spotted 6 points. It was pretty interesting to watch in a very tough way and a lot of emotions afterwards. And I think it'll be interesting to watch how this team reacts, how this team bounces off of that. But, yeah, I mean, you come off of that. And we described, obviously, what these next 2 weeks are. Now, if you have a good week this week and you have every opportunity to have a really good week this week, you know, you're at Buffalo coming up tomorrow, have Northern Illinois at home. To take a look at the standings right now, Buffalo's at 1-4 in conference. Northern Illinois is at 0-5 in conference play so far. Buffalo's only won 2 games all year long. They won 1 non-conference game and have won 1 Mid-American Conference game. Again, if you somehow come out of this week, and I know it's a one-game-at-a-time mentality, fully understand that. If you come out of this week and you win both of these games, I think the hurt of that Miami of Ohio side of things completely goes by the wayside. If you split this week, I still feel like it was a positive step forward, but it still takes more for you to see what happens in weeks to follow. I think at this point, it's all the way this team reacts now. I think it's all about how they react now. That's really what it comes down to. But tough way to end what was thought to be a really good opportunity to get to 2-4, and then you would have come into this week and said you have a great opportunity to get to 500 in conference. So again, you are judged by what happens in the middle of the conference, and this is one of those. You're gonna win and lose some. But the nature, sometimes the way you lose or the way you win can really, really impact things. And I'm just very curious, the way you lost this basketball game, you know, how do you bounce off of that? How do you move forward from that? And the only way to show that is by really actions. And by what happens tomorrow night. Because, again, if you come out look like the team you did a week ago Tuesday, you can kind of move on and then put the focus on, you know, the Saturday matchup you have at home with Northern Illinois. Looks like a game you can handle. Both of these games are games you can handle. Last week, both of those games were games that you could handle. One went your way and you looked great throughout. And the other one, you know, If they stopped it at 37 minutes, Ball State would have won that basketball game, and you would have been 2-4 in conference and talking about all the different things this week. So we'll see how it ultimately plays out, but it was a tough result for Ball State men's basketball again. In action tomorrow night, that Buffalo, you can hear the action as you can all season long right here on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, via the Ball State Radio Network. All right, when we come back, talk some football, talk some Pacers, maybe Pacers first and football next. Continuing on a Monday, a reaction Monday at that. Your calls welcome, 765-287-1340. Back with you next. Yes, we're back with you, Power Talk of Muncie. The new WMUN is always brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Glad you're with us on the show as always. Pacers didn't have a great weekend. They lost to Portland. Portland's not very good. Tyrese Halliburton, Pascal Siakam played together for the very first time with one another, and the Pacers fell on the road on a Western Coast road trip. And then last night, Tyrese Halliburton did not play, and Pascal Siakam did, and the Pacers struggled to finish it out against the Phoenix Suns, falling 117-110. And here's what I'm going to caution Pacers fans on. I just had a conversation about this today. I think about all the years that we've had all these stars go to different locations, and it is without fail every single time, no matter if it's a perfect fit or not a perfect fit or whatever the case may be, it never starts well. How many years in a row did, when the Miami Heat were on, you know, national TV every single night, and they would start each season like 5-7, or you know, a game or two under 500 with LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade? I mean, it happened every year. It happened this year when James Harden got traded to the Clippers. They were bad early. Now they're one of the best teams in the Western Conference. So here's what I'm going to caution Pacers fans on, that if it doesn't look good early, do not panic, because it never looks good early when you bring in a star. I mean, because what you do is you look on paper and you say, well, we're adding 22 points per game, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. I mean, we should win every game we play. You know, along with Tyrese Halliburton's 25-10, and it doesn't work that way, because you got to balance it out and something's got to give. Right, I said it before, I would fully expect Tyrese Halliburton's offensive numbers, points per game, to drop, because you got to incorporate a guy like Pascal Siakam. You don't just say, well, we're adding 22 points per game and that's what you're getting. Maybe more, maybe less, and it's got to balance out with everybody else on this roster. So leading up to the All-Star break, I would expect this to be rocky. That doesn't mean the Pacers are going to lose every game. It certainly doesn't mean they're going to win every game. We've already seen the results of that early on. But this is very typical for bringing in a really good to All-Star level player. There's a lot of positioning that you have to figure out, especially a guy that can play the 3, that can play the 4, and he played some 5. For you when you go to a smaller-ish lineup. I mean, you haven't had that depth and versatility on your roster, and you just think, oh man, it's going to just seamlessly fit. No, it takes some time. So I don't think these next couple weeks are going to look great from the Pacers' standpoint, but they're hoping it pays dividends once they get it figured out, which I fully expect it to happen. And when Tyrese Halliburton's back to full strength, which it feels like, you're going to be managing his games / minutes all the way up to the All-Star break. There's no reason to push it right now. No reason to. There's always something to play for, but there's more to play for after the All-Star break than before it. So why risk it, and why not just slowly but surely ease him back? So again, Pacers fans, it's not going to look great early. It never does with any star that joins a really good roster or an elite roster. You know, I think Kevin Durant didn't exactly fit seamlessly with Phoenix early on, with Brooklyn early on, with the Golden State Warriors early on. Like, it happens every single stop. It's weird. I get it. You're not playing NBA 2K, folks. where you're trading for Kevin Durant on a roster that is Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and whatever, and you're just launching threes. It's not NBA 2K. This is, you know, playing basketball, like in real life, just in case you wanted to know that. So anyway, that's my message to Pacers fans. And again, I mean, it's this is new to Pacers fans. It is. Because when's the last time you acquired a star? Never, right? Never, ever, ever. So it is going to be a little bit of an adjustment for everybody involved, and I'm curious how it plays out. So Pacers, again, the All-Star break's coming. So I do think there's some valuable games coming up. They've got the Nuggets coming up tomorrow. That's at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, Gainbridge Fieldhouse or whatever. And then the 76ers. So this is not a very easy week. My question would be, how much does Tyrese Halliburton play? What do you do with his minutes? Does he play one? Does he play both? I don't know. I think it'll be really interesting to see how all of this plays out. So anyway, we'll talk more about the Pacers throughout this week coming up. All right. The NFL games from over the weekend. We have the Lions versus the San Francisco 49ers. And then it is the Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to admit something. I'm dead wrong on the Ravens. Wow, did they just beat up the Houston Texans? I mean, they flat out beat them up. They flat out made C.J. Stroud uncomfortable. I mean, it was domination. It really was. And it really wasn't even that close. It would just so happen that Houston gets a punt return or a kick return for a touchdown, and it draws them, you know, kind of within the game a little bit. But Baltimore was the far superior team. It really was. So that was game number one. Game number two, it's just nice to see, you know, the San Francisco 49ers find ways across adversity to win. The Packers, they're tough, and I would expect them going into next year to be a team that everybody kind of has on high alert to really take a jump. How can you not feel great for Detroit? Detroit has an NFC championship game or team in the game. They're not at Detroit. They're in San Francisco. But they outlasted the Buccaneers. That offense is ridiculous. And then I mentioned it at the top of the show what Kansas City did again. Patrick Mahomes, 6 years as a starter in his sixth AFC championship game. It never stops because, again, they're not out of their era, folks. I mean, they're still the team that you got to beat. And, again, we always are going to bring this back to what does this mean for the Indianapolis Colts, okay? I can tell you one thing, Kansas City ain't going nowhere. So whether they win on Sunday or not, they will be in the mix every single year. So Kansas City's always going to be there. Baltimore, you know, they have a little bit of Philadelphia Eagles feel to them that they're really good this year. I mean, they are strong defensively. They have a very unique quarterback. It's very Philadelphia Eagles-like. It really, really is. So it's always harder to build off of when you have a year of success, so we'll see. Again, far from over and talking about the story of the NFL this year. But, you know, the Ravens system is kind of unique to what the Ravens do. But I'm going to tell you something. So we talked about both of those. Detroit's the outlier because they are just so gifted offensively. The two running backs they have, I think DJ Montgomery could start anywhere else. Jahmyr Gibbs could start anywhere else. Those are two of the better running backs in the NFL. Their defense is suspect, but their offense kind of takes care of it. And then you have the San Francisco 49ers that has a very good defense. They run the ball so effectively. And even with Deebo Samuel out, they won the football game. I mean, it was really impressive the way that they were able to just adjust and maybe not even play their best football, but still win. This is still an offensive league, folks. Let me make that very, very clear. But three of these four teams, their defenses are just as good as their offenses. You know, I think San Francisco's defense is as good as their offense is. I truly believe that with Baltimore, and I truly believe that with Kansas City. That's what messed people up a little bit about Kansas City is we are so used to Patrick Mahomes throwing for nearly 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns and all those different things, but they are a run the football, complete third downs, and their defense is physical, not just at the point of the attack in the front seven, but their corners get after you. Get absolutely after you with Trent McDuffie and with Jarius Sneed and all those different things. And so we focus on the offenses, and clearly the teams are here because of that. Kansas City would not be in the AFC Championship game without the way they played offensively the last 2 weeks. Their defense has been consistent all year, and their offense kind of has risen to the occasion the last 2 weeks. But man, oh man, you know, when you don't have your best stuff offensively, like how about San Francisco? Their defense made key stops. And if you go back to the game, you know, the Houston Texans game for the Indianapolis Colts, when they needed to make timely stops, they could not. They just couldn't. It's not about the amount of points that you give up. It's about the stops and when you have them in the moment. Kansas City made plays. Bills couldn't stop them. Kansas City made stops when the Bills couldn't make plays. It happened in San Francisco in the Packers game. So overall, again, I know we focus so much on playmakers, and no doubt about it, again, playmakers are huge. But I got to tell you, making key stops and having a defense that you have trust in the moment that can make those stops, huge. I'll also say this, and this goes to San Francisco, that game. This goes to the Kansas City game and whatever the case may be. The Colts were in that game against Houston a couple of weeks back specifically because what did they do? They emphasized Jonathan Taylor, their best player in those moments. What did San Francisco do in order to close out that game? They emphasized Christian McCaffrey. What did Kansas City finally incorporate in their offense? Travis Kelce scored 2 touchdowns last night. Those were the first receiving touchdowns he had had in 8 games. I don't know about you, but they look like a totally different team when they established Travis Kelce. Okay, Detroit closed out the game with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jahmyr Gibbs, their 2 best playmakers. They emphasized those guys in that moment. Okay, Baltimore, Lamar Jackson, self-explanatory, making a defense feel your presence by using your best playmaker to force them to adjust. I thought that there were moments this year where Jonathan Taylor absolutely disappeared. Now, in the biggest game against Houston, they did so for 3 quarters. Now, we can all go back to the play call where Jonathan Taylor wasn't in the game, but I can give this to Shane Steichen and something to think about going into 2024 season. How can you find more ways to get Jonathan Taylor the football? Because these teams, when it counted more so than anything else, they weren't going to their second, third wide receivers. They were going to their dudes. They're all pros. Their best player. And Jonathan Taylor is just that for the Indianapolis Colts. Take a page from that, man. That's how you win. And you were darn close against Houston. A couple of things that you could tweak, but that stood out to me as well. All right, we're going to step aside, come back, close up a Monday show after this. State men's basketball in action tomorrow night. Women's basketball back in action tomorrow, or on Wednesday, that is. We have NFL. We have Pacers. We have a lot of different things. High school basketball. The girls' sectional draw was last night. Their tournament begins next week for the high school state finals for the girls' side. We're getting to that point, folks, nearing the end of January and tournament time for a lot of winter sports begins in February. Looking forward to all the coverage that we have for that coming up as well. So, podcast for this show and every show we do, wherever you get your podcast, just search WMUN or visit our website, WMUNMuncie.com. Back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 o'clock. Have a great evening.